If you haven't already, close your eyes. And I want you to think about some challenge, something you think is a problem, something you are concerned about. And once you've thought of it, don't try and do anything with it. Go to your body and feel your sensations. Feel whatever is going on in your sensations. Just feel them. Watch them. Watch them move, not move. Don't try to calm down. Don't try to get rid of them. Just look at what's going on. As I read this prayer, which is called The Welcoming Prayer by Thomas Keating. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me in this moment because I know it is for my healing. I welcome all thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. I let go of my desire for security. I let go of my desire for affection. I let go of my desire for control. I let go of my desire for changing anything, situation, condition, person, or myself. I open to the love and presence of God and the healing action and grace within. So now, having heard that prayer, just sit silently with your sensation, looking at it, welcoming it, embracing it. We'll take a few moments in the silence. Okay, slowly come back to this place, but staying with yourself, with your interior experience, because our interior experience is really all we are, all we have. And as we go through the service and today, just notice where you are and be with it. Come on back. I have tried everything I could, and I don't know which way to go. I have reached, I have run, I have grabbed for the sun, and the answer has still been no. I have given it all I've got, and I've done everything I should. I have worked, I have tried, I have prayed, I have cried, and it hasn't done any good. Now I'm reaching the end of my rope, and I find myself giving up hope. 'Cause I'm feeling so empty inside, but there's one thing left that I haven't tried. Give up, give in, it's clear that I just can't win. Let go, don't fight, stop trying to make things right. Everything that I've tried has failed. Every plan that I've had fell through. Now there's nothing to give me a reason to live, and there's no more that I can do. So I'm wondering why I'm here, and I'm asking why should I stay in a world that abuses me, batters and bruises me badly day after day. But the answers are not in my mind. When I'm searching there, all that I find is a future that's based on the past that keeps telling me, surrender at last. Give up, give in, it's clear that you just can't win. Let go, don't fight. Stop trying to make things right. God, I offer myself to thee. God, if someone is gonna come through, it's gonna be you, not me. I give up, I give in. It's clear that I just can't win. I let go, I won't fight. I'm through trying to make things right. If you wanna make things right, then do it. This works. I learned if you put this little earplug in your ear, it's not even on. I hear myself. I don't push. It's nice. So, I give up, give in. It's clear that I just can't win. I wrote that song at a time in my life when I couldn't get anything to work. I couldn't make any of the things I wanted to have happen, happen. A lot of things were happening that I didn't want to have happen. My father used to always say to me, while you're complaining about the things you have that you don't want, try thanking God for the things you don't have that you don't want. I have this disease. I don't have that disease. Okay. And so I was at a point where I just didn't feel good, I couldn't get anything to happen, and I had tried everything I could do, and nothing worked. And I had reached the end of my rope, and I said, okay, I can't do it. I give up. And in doing that, I let go and let God, whatever that is, whatever God is, whoever is doing that, I didn't know. And this is the thing, there is a piece of everything that is called grace. It's just given. Now, I love it. Thank you, Rayessa, for giving us the definition of grace in the world and how we express grace. Grace with a small g. Today we're going to talk about grace with a capital G. And grace with a capital G, I looked the definition, unearned gifts. Mm-hmm. Gifts that are given freely by some force which we might call God. And we don't know how or why they are given. They just are, unearned, for no reason. The gifts are just here. So, if you look at the gifts that are given that we don't understand, we live on a little spinning ball in an infinite space. We don't know why. We don't even experience that we're on a ball, but we are. We have no understanding. We can look and observe things, but we don't know why space is there. We don't know what it means. We don't know what infinity is. Space is infinite. So when you get to the end of it, there's got to be something after. We can't conceive of space. And we're here. Our hearts are beating. Our blood is flowing. Our livers are functioning. We get sick. We get well. There are other people, there are animals, there are plants, there are trees, there is joy, there is love. There are terrible things that happen and wonderful surprises that happen. I have a member of Thought Exchange who said whenever she has a problem, and when she had a problem when she was a child, like they missed the plane, her mother would say, I wonder what wonderful surprises God has in store for us today. And invariably, something would come out of that. So things come out of things we would call upsetting. Things come out of things we call wonderful. So we live in grace all the time. We are completely at the mercy. And I just, as I said that, I heard at the mercy of sounds like, oh no, until we go, I'm at the mercy of all this. There is mercy being given to me at every minute. Things are turning around. Things are coming through. We don't know what anything is for. So my Al-Anon sponsor says to me, I've been an Al-Anon for 35 years, and I hand everything over to higher power. I don't know who higher power is. I don't know where higher power is. I don't know what higher power is. I just hand it over. Now, in the Jewish religion, I grew up conservative, which is semi-religious. And so in the Jewish religion, you are taught you are not allowed to say the name of God. Judaism has, you are not allowed to say Yahweh. I didn't get hit by lightning. As a child, I thought I would. And you say Adonai, Adashem, you say euphemisms. But I began to realize it's not that I'm going to get hit by lightning. It's that you can't say the name of God. The name of God cannot be said because you can't understand it. It's the great mystery. And so we are living in this great mystery, in this great place of being cared for. Now, the Bible, which is in unity a group of metaphysical allegories designed to teach us about how to live life. The Bible, we don't regard the Bible as history. It didn't happen. You look at some of the things, Adam and Eve were the first people. They had three kids. They were all boys. Where'd everyone else come from? You know, it doesn't make any logical sense. But they are stories. Cinderella could very well be a Bible story. It's about how you can be downtrodden and miracles can happen and you can end up with a prince because things you never thought of if you just believe and yes, all that. And in grace, you don't earn grace. So the Bible comes right out of the box, Old Testament, with two stories about grace. First, God said, let there be light, and there was light. Doesn't say, God said, let there be light. And then he went, and he got light molecules, and he put them together, and he structured them. We have no idea how light happened. It's saying, you can't. That's the part you can't know. When I flip the switch, the light goes on up there. I don't know how electricity happens, even if I understand electricity. Why is there electricity? Why are there laws of the universe? Grace. We're living in grace. And we so often have trouble being with that grace. We want to fight it. We want to resist it. We want to know how it works. So in the Bible, the next story is Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve lived in the Garden of Eden in complete grace. They were, all the food they needed was provided. All the shelter they needed was provided. All the love they needed was provided. There were plants and animals and each other. Eve came from Adam's rib, which is not a thing about women are less in metaphysics. It's that Eve and Adam were the same thing, and they just came from the same place. They didn't need clothes. Why? Because there was nothing allegorically to cover up, nothing to be ashamed of, nothing to be guilty about. They were just there in all this wonder, there to think it and it's there, enjoy it. This comes, that comes. And then they decided, I need to know how to control this. It would be like me saying to you, I want you to eat this piece of food, and I want you to determine how much amino acid you're going to secrete in order to digest it. And you go, I can't possibly do that. But most things we can't possibly do. In fact, everything. So Adam and Eve decided they wanted to know. And in wanting to know and take control, they fell out of grace. They fell out of the situation where they were, hey, everything's here. And Sean always laughs. There's a thing where God says, Adam, Eve, where are you? And he says, they're the only two people in the universe, and he created them. How can he not know where they are? But what he's saying is, where have you gone? How, why have you separated from me? So when we fall out of grace, we sin. Now, Bible thumpers and fundamentalists say, we're all sinners. We are all sinners, but we have to know what sin means. Sin means miss the mark. Sin means forgot our connection to something that is always there. The something that loves us is always there. It's we who forget our connection to it. And so we become sinners, and when we sin, we fall from a state of grace, which is heaven, to we're in hell because we're trying to control, we're trying to do, we're trying to change everything. And we think that things have to be different, and we think that we have to know how to do them. And so if we look and say, I'm going to accept this grace. So where does grace show up in my life? Well, I write songs. I don't write songs. I open and they write me. I don't know how to write a song. I just open and something comes to me. And the more I'm willing to not know how I do it, the better I write, because it's just here. Now, it's interesting because when I do a talk like this, I sat down a week ago and I wrote out a talk, and it was a very, you know, point by point, meticulous, take you here, take you there. And then I said, oh, I'm going to be reading it. I don't want to just read. And so I bolded all these things so that I'd know I'd be able to look down, et cetera, et cetera. And then I said to myself, huh, you're talking about grace. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is and let God speak? And so this morning, when I woke up, I was in a panic because, oh my God, I better figure out what I'm going to say. And then I said, no, I better open to grace. I better just keep letting go to that. And I have no idea what I'm going to say. Now, Sean, when Sean started here as the minister, what we would do, we do like show business. We would, he would write his talk, and on Friday night, he'd stand up, I'd sit with a yellow pad, and I'd take notes like a director. I'd say, didn't understand that. You need another story here. You're not clear. You're talking about too many things. I don't know your point. And I'd give him notes, and he'd redo it and speak. After a short while, he didn't need my notes anymore. He just wrote his talks. And what he did was, he would study all week, as he still does, and then get up at 6 in the morning on Sunday and write the talk and give it. So we were in Tampa, in our home in Tampa, and we were speaking at Unity of Palm Harbor, which is about 45 minutes away. And we had to be there at 9 o'clock. So Sean set our new alarm clock for 6 o'clock. And we woke up, and it was 5:45. And we said, oh, great, we have 15 minutes. And we went back to sleep, and we woke up, and it was 5:45. The alarm clock was not working, and it was actually 8. So Sean said, I guess I'm not writing my talk today. And he got up and spoke. And the talk was one of the best he'd ever given. And so he, from then on, never wrote a talk again. When I was, my ear fell out, excuse me. Can't hear anything. So, years ago, I was, Nancy Lamott called me from the road, and she said, you know, I'm getting tired of my closing number. Could you write me something else? And I said, well, what do you want? She said, something that sends the audience out with a sense of joy, a sense of happiness, a sense of hope, because she was singing The Secret of Life by James Taylor, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous song, but she'd been singing it for 10 years, so... So I sat down and I wrote, don't give up the ship, even when you feel it's sinking and you don't know what to do. And then I wrote, help is on the way from places you don't know about today. And then I got stuck. And I said to myself, oh no, I'm stuck. I gotta sit here and do it. And then I said, wait a minute. I'm writing a song about help is on the way. Put your money where your mouth is again. And I went to a party. And at that party, I had a lot of conversations with people, and a lot of them were telling me what their problems were. And then I talked to Alex Corey, and she said, why don't you write a song to those people? So I went home, and every line of that song is written to a different person based on the problem they told me, what they would need to hear. So that came out. And because I trusted, because I allowed something to come through me. Now, if you have, like if someone's in AA, and they say, well, I haven't had a drink for 10 years because I had the, you know, fortitude and the willpower to not drink while that person didn't. What gave you the willpower? How come you can do this and that person can't? Grace. Grace. We don't own anything. There's a wonderful other definition. Ephesians 2:8 says this, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast. I was rehearsing Desperate Measures, and a singer was singing a song, and I said, oh my God, that is such a fabulous song. I wrote it. I wasn't bragging, because I knew I didn't write it. It was like, isn't this wonderful that this song came through me? And to know that it's not just, we're not conquering life. It's not about, I got to get something good to happen. It's whatever happens, if we regard it as grace. I was having a conversation with Sean today, and we were talking about addiction. And addiction is not trying to hurt us. Addiction is saying, you're in trouble, you're in pain, and I have a way for you to be out of pain. And it takes us there. It's trying to do us good. But when we say, you know what, I want to go on the stage, or I want to be related to this person, and being taken away from me is causing me to not be able to do that, then we say thank you, thank you, thank you to the addiction. We don't fight it. It's like, Sean bought me a new pair of shoes because we're going to Italy, and Sean, anytime he can buy a new pair of shoes for anybody, it's like, you know. And so he bought me these shoes, and he bought them because he wants me to be comfortable and because he loves the shop. Now, if I say to Sean, oh, great, you spent so much money, he was giving me something in love, and I'm telling him he's attacking me. And he's saying, I'm not attacking you. So our addictions, our pains, our challenges are not attacking us. They're giving us a signal that there was some pain in the past. And so with all of this, I began to wonder why, knowing that we live in grace, why, knowing that I'm going to get up here today and God is going to speak, why don't I let go to it? Why don't I relax and go, ah, I know this? And to find these things out, to explore these, I created the Thought Exchange 20 years ago. And the first thing I worked with, because I created it at Unity of New York, is the Unity principle that thoughts produced in mind create after their own kind. So, you know, you read The Secret and it says, oh, it's fabulous. You just take on a positive thought. I have $1 million and there's $1 million. But I noticed that time and again, we would take on these positive thoughts and almost immediately grab for our negative thoughts. And I would think, we're not stupid. We're not lazy. We're not, you know, we're seekers who really are serious about what we're doing, and yet we're doing this. Why is that? And I realized it's because positive thoughts, if they are related to some trauma in the past, come with uncomfortable, where did my, oh, there it is, come with uncomfortable sensations. And I thought, so, for instance, you were a kid and you said, I can do this. And someone slapped you across the face and said, no, you can't. Anytime you think I can do this, you feel endangered. And as a kid, we quickly learn that the way not to be slapped across the face is to say, I can't do this, to take on what I call a protective thought. And so we immediately go to an uncomfortable sensation and we erroneously think that that uncomfortable sensation means that we can't do it. It actually is just an uncomfortable sensation from a memory that we have of a painful time. And so in trying to understand why this happens, to heal my own anxiety or to manage it anyway, and to work with the anxieties and challenges of people I work with, I took a lot of different modalities related to trauma and was introduced to the limbic system. Now, we all have a limbic system, and our limbic system is a system that is designed for one thing and one thing only, to keep us alive. And it will do that by keeping track of every single upset that happens and looking in the present and seeing if there's any upset that looks like it, and signal us through hormones which tell us to fight, flee, or freeze. And those hormones get signaled. And so the limbic system is like the Secret Service. I'm walking down the street and it's going, this could be a sniper there, there could be a this there, there could be a that there. Watch out for that. Remember when you stepped off the curb 40 years ago and this happened and that happened. So for instance, Deb, I'll be your limbic system. Tell me what you're doing after service.
Take your class.
Oh, are you really? Do you think it's going to be good? Do you think, what, how? Are you going to be hungry? Are you going to be able to eat? Really? You think so? What if you get to that restaurant and there's not enough time? It's remembering every single thing that could possibly happen. My grandmother was a walking limbic system. When she first, the first week she and my grandfather were married, she sent him out for a quart of milk, and he brought back two for the next 57 years. Joe, go get a quart of milk. Don't bring back two. She was on alert because she was frightened. And so the limbic system is frightened. But the limbic system, so you're saying, I got so nervous. It is not fighting you. It is giving you signals that you need or needed. And you can look at it. Also, the limbic system is much faster than our conscious brain. And when it operates, it takes your conscious brain offline. So I'm in the street and I go, huh, there's a car coming down the street. I wonder if that car is going to hit me. I don't know. Maybe I should think about stepping out of the way. Before that, I find myself on the sidewalk, heart pounding, blood flowing. The limbic system gave me a shot of adrenaline, said, get out of here. It saved me. But very often now, the limbic system is telling us things, not because it's broken, not because it's erroneous, but it's remembering, like a Jewish grandmother, that this could happen, that could happen, this could happen. I remember I had two grandmothers, one of them very anxious, one not. And my unanxious grandmother lived on the sixth floor in the Bronx of a building. And there was a building about 25 feet away, a roof, with a big six-floor drop between. And my anxious grandmother said, never leave your window open because someone could take a board and go from that roof 25 feet away and walk into your apartment. She could think of everything. When my mother wanted to learn to swim, my grandmother cut out articles about people drowning. And my mother never learned to swim. And when she was an adult, she took the class guaranteed to learn to swim or your money back. She got her money back. She couldn't do it. Years later, my mother was learning to drive. Grandmother cut out articles about driving accidents. Now, and in a wonderful misplaced grammatical structure, she said, what are you driving? You're going to kill the children. Let Charlie do that. So, our limbic system is talking to us. And so we take on a positive. It is true that if we take on a positive thought and stay with that thought, we start to see it in the world. Not because we're making things happen, but because the whole world happens in our experience. And what we're seeing in the mirror of the world is simply our thought. That's why Sean, it's one of my favorite things he says, doesn't it just irk you when people you can't stand have friends? That everyone is looking. I think someone's horrible. Someone else thinks they're wonderful. Neither is true. I'm only seeing my thought. And so the place to work is in my thought. So we take on the thought we want, and we have the sensations that we have. The key to being able to manifest the thought is to stay with the sensations. Now, the other day, Deb had this wonderful revelation in Thought Exchange, which was really inspiring. I did that exercise, we did, and by the way, that and another wonderful prayer are in your programs. And Deb shared, I had this uncomfortable sensation, and I just sat with it, and I suddenly relaxed, and the sensation didn't go away. I could be relaxed with the sensation. So believe me, there is a limbic system going, you can't do this talk, you can't do this talk, what are you doing? You're going to drop dead, you're going to this and that. That is just talking to me, and I hear it. And I just stay with my thought and the uncomfortable sensation. So if we can stay with our thought and the sensation that it brings up, we can do anything. The reason we are stopped is because we try to get away from sensations which are old, which are meaningless, and which will always come up because the limbic system has a record of it. But 99% of the time, I'm not 5 years old. I'm not stuck in this. I'm not that person. This is not happening. I have other tools. And so if we can be with the sensations that come up when we take the thoughts we want to take on, we can do anything. When you think about it, almost everything that is worth doing comes with discomfort. I want to do this talk. I'm uncomfortable. I want to go on the stage. I'm uncomfortable. You want to ask someone out on a date or get married. You're uncomfortable. You want to start a business. It's always uncomfortable. And we waste so much time and energy trying to get comfortable. One of the biggest misconceptions in New Thought is that when you get what you want, or when you take on a positive thought, you will feel comfortable. Nothing could be further from the truth. You will when people say, oh, you and Sean have this wonderful relationship, I'd like to have a relationship like that. I say, I'm very happy I have this relationship. Are you willing to be that uncomfortable? Yeah. Are you willing to be that bored? I've been going to the gym and I have muscles. I showed them to someone. They said, oh, Sean's going to be so excited. I said, no, he won't. He won't even notice it. That's not what we do. And so to be able to be with the discomfort and know that grace is taking care of it. In other words, we take on the thought. We do not know how, why it happens. And so often, especially if people are fundamentalists, they go, I know that Jesus wants this, and Jesus did this, and God did that. No, we don't. We have no idea. It's the great mystery. But we learn we cannot control the mystery, but our consciousness, God is called I Am in the Bible. We take on something in consciousness, and it happens in ways we can't know. It's like having a wonderful housekeeper and not having to do any work. But if my grandmother, she says, oh, Ida came today, I'm so exhausted. I say, why? She said, well, I had to clean out the closet before she came. I had to move the couch. I couldn't let her see the dust. But what did she do? And so if we go, I'm in the Garden of Eden. Relax. My favorite example of the Garden of Eden is our pets. Our pets live in the Garden of Eden, and we are God. Our cats are fed. The food just shows up. They want love. They run over to us. We pick them up. We notice they're not feeling well. We take them to the vet. We go away. We have people there. They get water whenever they need it. They have everything they need. We are God to them, and they don't question it. They just know it shows up. It's just there. Now, years ago, when we got Cooper, the first day we got Cooper, Sean and I are upstairs in bed, and we hear crash. And Sean goes down, and Cooper has climbed up on a ledge, knocked over a vase into another vase, and everything is smashed on the floor. And I hear Sean, you know, prickly Sean, you know, go, oh, Cooper, are you all right? Oh, honey, it's okay, which taught me anything can be used for an opportunity of love, for love. Any illness, any upset, any is an opportunity for us to love each other. Now, if I had done that at that time, it would have been different. Sean wouldn't have been so godlike to me. But in the course of years, what we are working on is that at every one of those moments, we have an opportunity to make it about love, to be grace, to go, David, that's okay. Even though we will have a feeling of, whoa, what is this? And we will remember when we were attacked, and we will think, to go, it's okay. David, that's fine. We'll clean it up. And then we feel that grace. We can be that grace. As you said, the A is for action. We can be that grace in action by remembering that that's where we have a choice. We don't control things. We don't control our reactions. But we have the choice to take on a thought, feel the sensations, and when we can feel our sensations, we can act any way we please. So, this afternoon, I'm going to, at 12:30, do a thought exchange workshop. And what we're going to do is we're going to practice allowing ourselves to be in grace by taking on, bringing problems, what we perceive as problems, which are not in grace problems. Nothing's a problem in grace. And we will take on the thought we want to take on, notice the uncomfortable sensations that we experience, and simply be with them. And by being with them, we can take on any thought. And grace even takes care of, like, when you say, I'm going to act. Why do we act? A thought comes to us out of nowhere, out of grace. So all we do, thought, sensation, and then we do something. Then we get stuck. Oh, no, I don't know what to do next. go right back to thought and sensation. So at 12:30 for 2 hours, we're going to do a workshop and bring all your issues, bring all your greatest dreams and desires, and we're going to practice saying the word, being with the sensations, not trying to feel comfortable, and watch how our lives expand. Now, I want to close with one more story. I'm going to move over here. About one of the biggest experiences of grace I had, and that's meeting Sean. And so I was at Nancy Lamont's memorial with my current partner, and Sean says we met, I don't remember, but he was introduced to me, and he said, he looked in my eyes, and he said, I'm going to be with that man. I didn't see it. 3 years later, my partner, who was a director, left me suddenly in one day. Sean is the light and sound man at Don't Tell Mama, and my partner is directing the act that night. And he walks in and says, if I'm a little off tonight, it's because David and I split up. And Sean goes, But another 3 years went by, and I didn't notice him, because after my partner split up, I was holding the protective thought, I can't have a boyfriend, because my limbic system was saying, it's going to hurt. You're going to get in trouble. And so I didn't see him. And I ended up coming to Unity with Norm Lewis for him to perform a song of mine. And Unity asked me to be on this retreat. And Sean said, I'm coming back with a David. So anyway, he was around me all the time, but I didn't notice him. And one day I was sitting in a little chapel, and I was getting more and more depressed. It had been 3 years, and I was really thinking, I'm so awful, I can't have anyone, this is not going to happen. And suddenly, I had the thought, wait a minute. Patti LuPone must have auditioned for Cats. She didn't get it, Betty Buckley got it. Patti didn't assume from that audition that she couldn't do a Broadway show. She won a Tony for Evita, she won a Tony for Gypsy, she won a Tony for Company. Why am I assuming, because one guy left me, that I can't have a boyfriend? I'm a wonderful guy. I would make someone a fabulous boyfriend. And as I had that thought, the door opened and Sean walked in and said, hi. And he sat down and was talking to me, and I thought, this guy's hitting on me. I haven't seen that in years. And we've been together ever since. That was grace, but it was me holding a thought, and even though he's going da 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 da, he's not, I can't see him. And the minute I have that thought, something went across the universe. And he didn't know I was in that chapel. He just, something happened. So this is a song about how I got out of that funk and met Sean. However, the interesting grace about that song, because Grace wrote it, I didn't, is I wrote it 6 months before this happened. And it was the template for how this would happen. Limbic system says that pause was a disaster. I finally let go of waiting around for one dream to come true. I finally said no. No more living as though there were nothing to do but search for one love. And if that love didn't come along, was I nothing? Was life nothing? I finally said, hey, get out of the future, start living today. I finally said, wow, There's so much to be thankful for right here and now, and I'm missing it. Missing the smiles of my friends, missing the beauty that lives all around me, and the sunsets, and the music. I finally sip wine, keep reliving the past of a day that I die. I finally sip gin. If it's gonna be different, it's gonna be me who changes it. Me who lets go of the pain. Me who surrenders to this very moment, to the heartbreak and the sadness and the passion and the longing and the feeling. The feeling. And then I went deep inside, and there I finally cried. For all of the wishes that never came true, and all of the great things I wanted to do, and all of the dreams that I never would know, and I let them go. I let them go. And I finally could say, if there's no more than this, I can still be okay. I finally could see, it was more than enough to be here, to be me, living every day. And when I was finally aware, when I'm alone, there's still someone there, and that someone is me. That someone is me. Then I finally found peace, 'cause then I finally knew that happiness comes from inside of me. And then, only then, I found you. Grace. Yeah.